friggin' what up, dude. Strider Wilson, and I'm the host of this podcast that's mine. Going to be called History Is Dying.
History is dying with Strider Wilson. From the
friggin' what up, dude. I'm your host, Strider Wilson. Welcome back to another ep of History Is Dank. Fired up to be in the studio with Aaron, dude. What up, Aaron?
What up?
Chilling right now, dude. Chilling and grilling, dude. Doing it right, earning and burning, getting it done, dude. Fired up on my research this week. Fired up for this historical share, dude. Fired up for right now, dude. A little personal share, dude. Start things off, kick things off as we always do, dude. Structure, dude. We find comfort in structure, you know what I mean? Kids like structure, dude. Adults, dude, basically just kids, dude. You know what I mean? Who pay bills. You know what I'm saying, dude? We can be babies sometimes too, if not worse. You know what I mean? Adults, you know, adults are telling kids, dude, go eat breakfast, the most important meal of the day. Nah, dude. Adults need breakfast for energy. Kids, they can go. But then again, kids are idiots too, because they'll just burn their energy, go, 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 and then crash. Adults, we know how to conserve. We're not like baby rattlers, dude. Aaron, I mean, I'm saying this stuff like I know, like I've got a kid, like I've been around my niece. That's why I'm talking about this. But it's like, Aaron, you're a father, dude. What's up, dude? What have you observed, dude?
We definitely don't have to tell our baby to eat breakfast. She'll let us know.
Oh, she's waking you up going, let's go.
Yeah. She's more like, give me breakfast or I will end you with sound.
Have you been able to interpret any of her cries as like a, you know, like, is there like a wah that's like super rage or a wah that's more of like, what up, dad? Anything like that?
There's definitely a, I'm just making noise versus a, I really need something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely a different level. There's a second gear.
Those are basically the only gears you need. It's like, yeah. Look, is this a life issue or is this like a, I just want to come in and get cuddled issue or something like that, dude?
Yeah.
I mean, right now, dude, speaking of cuddles, my GF, dude, you know, I can empathize with her greater now because, you know, sometimes after smooching, dude, or, you know, we're spooning, and typically I would be a little spoon, but sometimes, you know, honestly, I think everyone deep down really wants to be a little spoon. I mean, come on, dude. But sometimes, you know, you feel pretty masculine, legit, dude, if you're big spooning. And, you know, sometimes then I roll over, dude, get a little bit of, you know, accidentally my dank fiance, as I should say now, hair. And she'll be like, oh, dude, try to look out. Oh, my bad, dude. But now I can empathize with that because I don't know if you've noticed, and this is another visual thing, so I apologize to listeners, but you all know what I'm about to reference. I'm working on a hairstyle right now, and it's disgusting. It is a mullet. I'm having a disgusting mullet right now, dude. So I'll whip off the lid so you can get a better look here, Aaron. I'm now at a side profile. Look how disgusting that is. How's that? Yeah, oh yeah, that's a great angle, Aaron. I mean, it's disgusting. It's touching the back of my headphones, which I've now removed. People see it. I've noticed that I get treated. People are maintaining their 6 feet from this mullet because they go, this probably hasn't been washed. You know, what are the policies of a guy who rocks a mullet? You know, is he a baseball pitcher from the 80s? You know, is he a off-season ski instructor? What's he doing not in the mountains right now? Does this guy do blow regularly?
Yeah. You have a truck with a flag hanging off of it?
Correct.
Whatever the flag says doesn't really matter.
It would be like a Fox Racing flag or something like that, dude.
Yeah, or don't tread on me or...
Yes, something like that, for sure, dude. Flag of just some ball, like, a, you know, I'd have one of those metal ball sacks off of my toe on the back of my truck, you know?
Truck nuts.
Yeah, definitely have some truck nuts. And I want all these things. And maybe that's really who I am. I mean, I drive a hybrid. I'm soft. I do not fight. I have no flags. What I stand for, I'm not certain, other than just straight up chilling and raging with my boys. So maybe that's what I stand for. Maybe we need a flag, like a pirate flag, but for chilling. You know, there's a Jolly Roger. People are afraid of that. Like, what's the flag that you could raise that's just like, dude, we're straight up. Like, maybe it's a shock of what up on a flag. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Be tight. Maybe you just repurpose the surrender flag. It's white, but this just means we've got blow. Let's go. Which would be a sick rhyme. I'm not condoning that kids go out there and do that, but I'm just saying. Know what I'm saying? Anyway, dude, freaking fired up, dude. And speaking of flags and pirates, today you're probably asking yourself, dude, episode 1 of History Is Dank was all about, you know, Joseph Bannister, legendary pirate, dude. how come I haven't revisited Pirates in so long? And guess what? I have today. We're talking about legendary badass lady pirate and captain of the Red Flag Fleet, dude, Ching Shi, dude. Have you ever heard of Ching Shi, dude?
No, I when you said lady pirate, I assumed it was going to be Anne Bonny, I think is her name.
Who's that? Is that the one from
Cutthroat Island?
Cutthroat Island. Yep. Yeah, I believe Gina so. Davis's character. Cutthroat made me think of rewatching Cutthroat Island, which I should do. If you're listening, dude, and you haven't seen Cutthroat Island, go ahead and listen, dude. Part of what I love about being a pirate is, dude, if I have my mullet, no one's judging my mullet, dude. There's no judgment. It's like, dude, just, you know, are you getting after it when we, you know, we're sailing? Are you swabbing the decks when it's your turn, dude? And are you being a chiller having my back? You know, that's what's up, you know? Yes, they maraud. They do bad things. I have to say this. And, you know, I got to do a disclaimer up top of, basically, Ching Shi is such a badass because she occupies a position that is seen. And she was, you know, born in 1775. Her peak was, you know, early, you know, right around the turn of the century, 1800, and to about 1810. And, of course, she was operating the South China Sea. And I'm not saying like, oh, dude, she did awful things. Dude, there's one story where she went to a village and just beheaded 80 dudes because they, like, weren't paying their taxes to the fleet. So was she, did she do bad things? Yeah, pirate comes with the territory. So I don't want to celebrate. I mean, I get fired up on a lot of aspects of piracy. There's definitely things that are terrible about it, dude, and it shouldn't be celebrated. You know, should it be your school mascot? Should the Pittsburgh Pirates not be the Pittsburgh Pirates? This is debates we can get into, dude. You know, but as far as today's episode, I want to be like, the fact that Ching Shi's story, what she came from, and then becoming a leader like she did, is pretty badass, pretty gnarly. She occupied, like, and the fact that she was more gnarly than any dude that would, like, strike fear into the heart of any ordinary person. Like, you didn't want to see anybody from any of the fleets that Ching Shi was commanding at her peak. And the fact that, like, you'd be like, you'd expect, like, Thanos, bro. Like, you would picture Thanos would be, like, freaking Josh Brolin, purple jacked Josh Brolin, dude. So you'd picture who'd be the captain of the Red Flag Fleet. But then you go, no, Ching Shi, this beautiful woman, dude. Amazing. But she had inside. What counted, and you know, we'll talk about her life experiences, and maybe you can make up your own mind of what enabled her to be so amazing. And the fact that, like, where you're going to see the arc of her story goes, like, it's, and it's a little bit of spoiler, but it's like, this is the best case scenario for a pirate's life. Like, when you say yo ho, a pirate's life for me, you would imagine it's Ching Shi, right? Which also was a pretty sick rhyme by me, keeping the rhyme going. Don't you see? I'm having a lot of fun. You know, I was talking to my dog out loud the other day and just saying stuff like, you're a cute little boy. Don't you need kisses? And I'll kill you and I'll chop you up. I like to tell my dog I'll kill him and chop him up just so he knows sometimes. Very strange. Aaron, why do I do that?
I mean, I'm always threatening to kill them with kisses or something like that.
So. Right. That's got to be what it is, dude. I'm like, you just need to get squished. And like, there's just something when I see something so cute inside of me, and this is going to get, you know, therapeutic right here, but you know, we're on the sound waves, dude. We're talking to my bro here, and you know, honest space, dude. I just want to squeeze the puppy so bad because it's so cute. I want to taxidermy it right now, dude. You know, but then I love its little eyes looking at me, dude. It's interesting, dude. This is an inappropriate question, but do you ever just want to squeeze your kid, dude, for being so cute?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm threatening to eat her toes.
Love that.
I mean, they're adorable. They're little baby toes.
It's interesting that we do this as humans, dude. I wonder what part of our brains that is where it's like, it's so cute. Is it because I never want it to change? I want it this way forever. But yeah. We have to let it grow, and that's the beauty of life. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Just having epiphanies on the pod today, dude, and I'm freaking fired up, and I'm absolutely loving it, dude. It's just the mullet. I'm attributing it. Dude, I'm attributing it to the mullet, dude. So, dude, let's talk about Ching Shi here, dude. Freaking badass pirate leader, dude. Terrorized the China Sea during the, I'm gonna also disclaimer up top, gonna have a lot of mispronunciations here, my bad, even though I did take Mandarin Chinese in college. Took it pass fail, smart by me. There was no way I was gonna get a good grade. You know, memorizing the characters and stuff, very difficult. My pronunciation was absolutely horrible. I mean, dude, just have my natural SoCal vernacular brought into any other language is just going to be, it's a heavy accent, dude. you know, that freaking south of the San Clemente. Actually, I'm technically north of the San Clemente pure accent. And it's just, you know, for Spanish, it's obviously just a donde está la biblioteca. Senora, what was my freaking, Senora Dofo was my senior Spanish. Senora Dofo, puedo ir al baño, por favor. Gracias. Did I tell you this, that I did a Spanish project on Madrid and talked about how it was like, dude, you straight up, durante el día, la gente te gusta ir a la playa y correr las olas mucho y comer pescadores y bebe freaking beers. And then she's like, all right, let me get through my whole oral report, and goes, boom, pulls out a map. Madrid's in the middle of the country, dude. Yeah, dude. Did no studying.
I realized that me and a buddy did a report on Ireland in probably ninth grade. And our only reference for it was the movie Trainspotting, which takes place in Scotland.
Yeah. Scottish, hilarious.
It was really,
that's amazing, dude.
It was pre-Google. I mean, we couldn't look it up. So, I mean,
that's gold. People in Ireland love to chug beers and then throw them at waitresses. That's what's happening. People love meth. Yeah.
Sometimes they'll just throw them in a cab. This is one of the things we literally said. Sometimes they'll just throw them in a cab and send them, have them sent home.
Amazing.
Yes, amazing. All Trainspotting.
Film, media, television, this media right here. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to give you the proper knowledge for when you don't do the proper research. You can crush this episode of the pod on your way to school and carpool. You know, if you don't want to talk to their kids in carpool, if they're schmoles, listen to this and then freaking go and ace your report, dude. That's what's up, dude. Anyway, dude, back to freaking Ching Chi, dude, on this freaking journey we're on, dude, talking about her freaking life of piracy, dude. At her peak, all right, Blackbeard commanded, you know, a handful of ships. I don't know the exact number, and I didn't want to get into an episode of comparing Ching Chi to Blackbeard and, like, you know, look at the lady way more badass, even though she is more badass than the dude. I don't want to, like, go with that narrative. I just wanted to talk about her life and her rise. But it's to be noted that Blackbeard commanded, you know, hundreds of men, maybe 1,000 at his peak, and, you know, multiple ships, dozen. Guess how many? These are called junks, traditional Chinese sailing ships. You've seen them. You can probably envision them, the cool, you know, looking sails, very colorful, dank. And do you know how many dudes were in the, her, how many junks she had at her peak?
Junks?
Yeah, these are like ships. So basically how many ships, dude, she had under her command.
Seven?
You said seven.
That feels like a lot.
1,800.
Holy shit.
And she had about 60,000 to 80,000 men, estimated somewhere in there. I call it 70,000 men, women, and occasionally children. She's a pirate, quote, employed by her or under her command. That's like a nation. And, you know, my freaking boy, Dan Carlin, says, when it comes to China, we forget about how massive things are. He goes, you take a normal statistic and times it by 10. That's always China. He's like, that's, you know, the toll, like this was in reference to like World War II, where it's like a bombing raid, you know, goes in this many planes and it takes out, and you hear about like the same amount in Europe, and it's just like, well, there's just less people, and then, you know, China's just, it's packed in, there's just so many more people, it's just, everything just seems more, a little more like just not intense, but he talks about the Japanese culture, it's every culture, but just intensified, which I think is a interesting thing, where it's like, yeah, and there's honor and there's code, but it's just when it comes to Japan, it's like that, but just more intense and more, you know, seems to be more ingrained. And then China, he talks about the statistics, and he's like, just the amount of people in the landmass, and like just how old, like China has the oldest recorded history. I mean, you could maybe argue Egypt or something, and then now you look at the Mayas and things are growing more, but like recorded and written down, like China, man, it's truly ancient. And it's amazing. It's, you know, quote, oldest civilization. And even though we go to Mesopotamia as a cradle of civilization, but maybe that's just a Western approach. In any event, we got to remember these statistics always seem insane, okay? But it's true. Yeah, dude, so there's little known about Ching Chi's early life other than the fact that she became a prostitute who worked in a floating brothel in Canton. Okay. I've never been to a brothel, but if I'm saying, if I'm going to go, it's going to probably be to a floating one, dude. Anything that you're going to say, like, dude, I like going to tiki bars, but sign me up more for a tiki barge. You know what I'm saying, dude? Let's put that thing on a boat. Let's go. Anything on a boat for me going to be a little bit better. Sub 2 hours. You know, sleeping overnight, cruise. All right, then we're getting, you know, then we're getting to a different territory here, dude. So she's on this floating brothel in Canton, dude. Punching in, doing work, dude, right? And freaking then in 1801, this pirate Zheng Yi, who commands the Red Flag Fleet, the most notorious fleet in the South China Sea, he noticed Ching Shi's beauty. And he, quote, wished to be with her, dude. So what does he do? There's two accounts. He sends a bunch of dudes to go into the brothel, you know, rampage it, find Ching Shi, take her to freaking Zheng Yi and say, all right, now you guys are be together. But obviously he wanted to, you know, pirates doing horrible things. There's no question, especially to women, all sorts of atrocious things. And I'm sure a ton of atrocities went down in this event, not to be celebrated. But we're going through her story here. And then she is presented in front of Zheng Yi and he asks her to marry him. So it's not worst case scenario. She says yes. And that's one account. Another account is that Zheng Yi simply, you know, after one night, you know, after paying the toll, asks her to marry him. And she agrees to after she proposes, you know, she sort of negotiates and wants power within his organization, would receive like equal share of plunder and stuff. Basically, she was negotiating that. And Zheng Yi says, yeah. And so they basically, you know, according to one account, there's probably some sort of mixed truth between those two things. But what should be noted, she was an excellent negotiator and she knew her assets. She knew how to use them and she knew. And look, I've been a valet for a long time. And this is, you know, I read history. It's difficult for me not to from my 21st century lens and through my own life experiences. But as a historian, we're supposed to be unbiased. But in this moment, I want to get a little bit biased and say as a valet, look, dude, I've heard a lot of stock talks at doors, you know, posting up at the Beverly Hills Hotel, grabbing doors from dudes, powerful dudes who are making a lot of investments, running a lot of hedge funds. You know, I'm hearing stuff like NFTs dropped, you know, a little bit while back. I'm hearing stuff like Bitcoin going down back in, you know, 2015, which I probably should have bought in on, you know, but didn't make the move. So you got to imagine, and it's recorded in history of like commanders and stuff in the, you know, even in the Revolutionary War in America, like sleeping with prostitutes and they'll get a little loose lipped, little pillow talk. But then, and in World War II, this would happen, you know, French women sleeping with Nazis. A lot of times, you know, they wouldn't want to, but they would do it as a freaking ploy to help out the resistance. So just really giving it their all, of course. And so you got to imagine, she's picking up knowledge. She's learns how dudes are operating. She's sponging this knowledge, dude. Not just cashing checks while she's there, dude, but also freaking in the future learning how to break necks and backs and bend knees to her future will. So she's gathering knowledge, dude, while in her position, quote, lowly viewed position of prostitution, which for me, I'm like, go get it, dude. You got it. Look, there's difficult means. You got to survive somehow, man. And she's doing tough freaking Lord's work. So no shame in there on my end. And I'm just, you know, I'm fired up that, you know, Zheng Yi, her husband, dude, that they're sort of like a, you know, I'm sure some of the pirates are like, oh, dude, great. Freaking his wife's now in the band. Cool, dude. I wonder if she's going to write a song, you know? Oh, interesting. You know, maybe a little bit of a Stars Born stuff. In the movie Stars Born, I think the band was very chill when freaking Lady Gaga, although she was a, you know, undeniable talent. And maybe Ching Shi was an undeniable talent when she came in there, dude, straight up fire marauder, dude, or something like that, you know? But basically, I was just fired up that they're a couple doing something, being on the same team together. And I just think that that's pretty dank, dude. So just want to note that. So they probably rule. This is in 1801. They're married. Then suddenly, dude, November 16th, 1807, Zheng Yi died. He dies in Vietnam, dude. Win Vietnam. Sources are varied as to why he died in a typhoon. So it could have just been an accident at sea, falling overboard. That's what happens. But some definitely point to his wife or his new heir, who is his son that he adopts, Cheng Pao. So after he dies, Ching Shi, he dies in 1807. So they had 6 years of just freaking, running the Red Flag Fleet and just dominating the region. But then Ching Shi does not want to go back to a life of prostitution. I mean, this is marriage. There's no, this is piracy. There's no society or documents being signed here or whatever. Like, it's just code. So she knows that this is her opportunity, dude. And she needs to freaking become a straight up pirate lord, bro, which is a fire freaking screen name, pirate lord, dude. If it's not taken, dibs. And so she could have simply stepped down, you know, allowing Chang Pao, who is sort of Zheng Yi's adopted son, to take over. But freaking Ching Shi just wanted the power, dude. She wanted the glory. That's what this account is saying, of running the Red Flag Fleet. She knows how to do it. She's been there, dude. We know she can sort of glean knowledge and learn how to do something. So she takes charge. Dude. Now, how exactly did she do this? We tell she made a set of alliances with commanders. Now, she commanded the Red Flag Fleet, but there's also like a Green Flag, Blue Flag, Black Flag. I kind of like how it's color coordinated. And she's sort of under her, I mentioned like under 70,000 pirates, and her peak unites all of these pirates to sort of all work together. They're like, look, why are we're robbing each other, we're fighting each other? No, let's just raid these coastal villages. Let's go to like government compounds or mansions or whatever. Let's take the resources and go. And if we don't fight each other, we're going to be all more successful. She even like set up a tax and everything. And I'll get into her rules in a little bit, but basically she set great alliances with these other captains and made sure everyone was, make sure they're, you know, everyone's beak's getting wet, they're getting rich. And then, she cultivates her relationships. Did she do it by, you know, placating on dude's horniness? Maybe, you know, the history books don't say so, but I think, you know, especially when it comes to pirates and all of society, horniness is the major driving factor, you know, it's right up there and it's next to hunger, dude, you know? So that's, you know, my historical take. If I was writing a thesis and how to turn it in at the end of the semester, it'd be about horniness in the South China Sea, turn of the century. Another sick rhyme.
Do you think she would have been like, because obviously we're thinking like a movie star.
Yes.
As a pirate, as mm-hmm. a female pirate. But you think she would have just been like dirty and gross?
Dude, everyone from this era, period, you watch a show like Vikings, Gladiator, like, everyone's disgusting and hasn't showered, dude. There's, dude, one of the term like buccaneer is like, I've read it's like either it's Portuguese or Spanish, but it's a iteration of the word for like the pelts that they used to smoke on the buccaneer ships. Like what differentiates a buccaneer versus a pirate? It's just like, one would be like maybe the region or like where the boat came from or like the captain and stuff. But like, this was in the Caribbean Sea, but it's like, it's because they smelt so bad. And it like had to do with like cattle or beaver pelts or whatever they were smoking. And then all the guys smelt like that. You got to think about like a whale ship or like the smoking of the blubber and stuff. Like, everything just is disgusting. You go below decks, like, look out, dude. You know? No one brushed their teeth if they had them.
Yeah.
A lot of, everyone wears the same clothes unless you're a Merca dude and then jack his boots or something like that. Like, probably you're barefoot.
That's what I'm saying. It might not have been horniness that motivated these people.
But here's the thing. Did they know anything different?
That's true.
Part of when you go to a brothel, you know, they talk about like you wash someone's feet, like I think that would be customary before going into a home. You know what I mean? Like the most disgusting part, or washes a prostitute's feet, like the most lowliest, the lowest part of the diet, just symbolic stuff, dude. But also quite literal as well. You know, anything on a boat, dude, look out. But horniness pervades all of that, Aaron. I would say, I would lean in more to my horniness theory and say that it supersedes any smell or any lack of brushing teeth.
Yeah.
Any sort of,
if you're into that life, you're into this lady.
Oh, for sure. She's powerful. She's beautiful. She represents everything. And she's smarter than everyone too. So she freaking creates, you know, this coalition that she was forming sort of with her husband, you know, uniting all the fleets. So she kind of plays on these existing loyalties to her husband and makes herself an essential remaining captain. So it's sick, dude. And she creates a strict rules for her fleet. So, once she was in charge, she became a regimented pirate lord, dude. She focused on business and military strategy, dude. She went to great lengths to form an ad hoc government under which her pirates were bound and provided by law and taxes. So she's basically setting up a society at sea, dude, right? Any plunder that was seized had to first be presented to the fleet and registered before it could be distributed. Whatever ships were captured and loot was entitled to retain 20% of its value, where the remaining 80 was placed in the fleet's collective fund, dude. So they'd cruise up on somewhere like Macau or whatever to go get like the Vegas of the East and just friggin' post up, maybe dip in a gambling purse's hand out some dough, dude. Just making sure that she's running, quote, a tight ship. I mean, come on, dude. Like, she set forth very strict rules regarding the treatment of captured prisoners, female prisoners in particular. Female captives who were considered to be ugly were released unharmed. Pretty unbelievable, right? A pirate who wished to be to take a beautiful female captive as their wife was free to do so, but they were bound to be faithful and care for her. So you couldn't cheat for her or beat her, dude. Whereas in the past, I'm sure that happened a lot. Unfaithfulness and rape were both offenses for which a pirate would be executed under Ching Shih's rule. So she's making some progress here. We like this. Harsh capital punishment was common for pirates of the Red Flag Fleet who did not stick to the code. Deserters would be hunted down and their ears were cut off when they were captured. Other punishments included flogging, quartering, and clapping the offenders in irons, dude. So, you know, she was strict, but she had a code. And I think that's what we like. We like when someone has a code, and especially when it prevents, you know, unnecessary atrocities or indulgence. Pretty gnarly, right? And you think about this, like, dude, she's basically running an empire on the ocean. She's basically Genghis Khan of the sea. Like, she has to feed the machine. She's got to feed this mechanism. And it's sort of like that. That's what they said about, like, the Mongolian. It was like they needed to keep invading because once you settled, just the culture of it was, they weren't meant, there was a nomadic group. Like, that wasn't their identity. They needed to go raid, get resources that way. That's how the society was built, and that's how these pirate societies are built. But inevitably, you're going to run out of loot. People are going to want to settle down and drop off at some point. And, you know, you're going to run into problems, and these other societies that you keep taking from are eventually going to be, you know, adapt and find a way to defeat you. And this happened to Ching Shih. Of course, she, you know, she's freaking posting up, doing work for about 3 years on her own after running with her husband, dominating the region, defeating other navies, defeating rival pirates and stuff. One of her biggest rival was like a Portuguese pirates and even the Portuguese Navy, who become employed. The Qing government at the time pays. And like, so, you know, the in China, you know, the honor is of course huge. And so they want to handle things on their own. And part of the government was like, look, we would look bad for our own people if we can't handle these pirates who are supposed to just be like weak, unorganized force. But we learned that they're not. They're basically a government at sea, a society at sea, if you will. And freaking finally the Chinese cave, they're like, look, we're going to pay the Portuguese. They've got a badass navy. We're going to pay some other pirates, and we need to get Ching Shih's is dominating the region, you know, like salt and stuff. They would steal salt, then resell it to other region, you know, at higher prices, take their cut. They'd block off like deltas where, you know, where ships would have to go from sea or trading vessels from Europe. They would charge them taxes just to not get, you know, their ships get plundered and stuff. So it was economical, but the threat of violence was always right there. You know, it's an ocean mafia. And finally the Qing government's like, you know what, dude, we're going to pay the Portuguese. We're going to pay some other pirates. We're going to, you know, bolster our fleet as best we can. And we're going to fight and we're going to duke it out. And there's this battle of the Tiger's Mouth, where eventually Ching Shih suffers like a major loss. She, at this point, assesses things and she goes, you know what? Sure, we could go and do smaller stuff and have to fight, and I could keep doing this pirate life and have relative success, you know, marauding coastal villages and stuff, making them pay taxes. But there was an offer from the government after that defeat, because it was somewhat of a Pyrrhic victory, to just say, look, all pirates who just turn themselves in as pirates can keep the loot that they stole that year. Which, how would you ever prove it? They would just say everything. But anyways, they go, look, we're not going to take your money. Come in, surrender your weapons, give up your piracy life, and we won't put you in jail. We won't charge you. You'll just have what's it called? Like, not amnesty, but just freaking
immunity.
Immunity. Yep, that's what you'd get. So Ching Shih goes, and she goes and basically negotiates this on behalf of her fleet and her underling fleets. And because she's the main one, she goes in there and sort of like sets this contract for everyone. and freaking the government like doesn't want to give it, like she's like, yeah, I'm gonna go, I'm still gonna be allowed to command boats and run like a merchant fleet, which the government wanted them out of the waters because the fear was like they would just start being pirates. And she's like, and they didn't want to like see it on that point. And then she just tells her guys to go and like raid this village not far from where the negotiations were happening and like hold piece of people hostage. And they're like, all right, fine. So she basically was, she was gnarly, dude, when she would negotiate. It turned out that she got, I want to get these, where are these stats, dude? Oh, she like goes in there like as a, she's like also good on gestures. Like she goes in there with like a group, band of women who are like, quote, illiterate, unable to read. And she's like, I've created great lives for these women. I'm now trying to educate them when, what is the government doing? Like, so she's, dude, she's a genius, like posturing like that when negotiating and then also playing the actual hardball. And you know, you just got to think, of course, of the victims, but it's crazy. Like she's basically just fighting for her people. I mean, everyone's all over Napoleon, all up on Napoleon's jock for what he did, but he's basically a conqueror just under the French flag. She's doing it under her freaking red flag fleet. Basically the same stuff.
I want to see a movie of this, and I think it should have been called Waterworld.
Dude, this is exactly, I think there probably are some, there's got to be some foreign films on her character, but like, dude, it is Waterworld 100%, but actually good.
Yeah.
Like, why do we need a fish man? Why do we need that in the movie Waterworld, dude?
I'm a merman, Dad.
So bad, dude. I'm a merman. Dude, amazing. She, okay. Like, I want to find this freaking stat for you guys. Okay, so she surrenders, ending her career and her fleet's career. Of course, you know, people went on to go do, you know, piracy, but not at her hands. The amnesty allowed only, and remember, she was commanding 70,000 in her peak. You know, probably a lot of dudes died. So maybe, you know, 40,000 dudes is who she's negotiating on behalf of. Oh, no. So her fleet at this point after her defeat and towards the end of her reign has dropped down to 20,000. So she's seeing writing on the wall. But only 60 pirates were banished from China. 151 exiled. I really don't know what the difference is there. 126 had to be put to death. So there was 126 dudes who everyone was just like, and even Ching Chi was like, yeah, Gary, he's just a psychopath. Yeah, this dude's just a nut, man. He hasn't brushed his teeth in a century. We'd have to maroon that guy every Tuesday. So yeah, I guess he's got to get put to death. I mean, it's sick to joke about it now in this context, but I mean, you know, too soon, maybe too soon. But of our whole fleet, only 17,000, like about a little, of our fleet of like 17,000, call it 20,000 at this time, surrendered their weapons and went back to their lives. Ching Shi, some of her captains even become captains in the Guangdong Navy. Sorry for the mispronunciation. So it's pretty impressive. There's a Portuguese account that I should mention that has varying, there's a lot of varying information around this, but you know, that's not, it's a pirate history and a pirate story. There's going to be myth, there's going to be legend. We have to expect boasting. And one-sided narrative.
I like to think that they had to surrender to the Portuguese because they have those terrifying dogs that swim.
Dude, bro, the Portuguese water dog, Obama's dog.
Yeah.
Dude, they look scary. They got so much energy, those dogs. They're beautiful. But yeah, dude, look out for a Portuguese water dog. They love the water, dude. Gnarly, dude. So freaking gnarly. So basically, dude, she ends her reign. She decides the end of her own story, which is probably but what maybe 1% of pirates get to do. You either get killed, you either get, you know, exiled, you betrayed, something else bad happens to you, you got to go into a different life, you know, you lose a limb, blah, blah, blah. So she negotiates with the government, keeps her money, legitimizes a business, gets remarried, runs that business, then that dude dies. Then she goes and retires on Macau. She opens a gambling house there, which, you know, she probably knew how to run totally. She, you know, learned her stuff from the, you got to think about her tax and everything just goes back to probably how a brothel was run. And I mean, these things are all very simple. You know, if you can get people to buy into it, has what I would imagine a very successful gambling house in Canton. And then she died in 1844. So pretty crazy. Seems like so long ago, but then you look at 1844 and it's definitely a different time, but it doesn't seem that crazy long ago.
Every time you say Canton, I'm like, Ohio?
That's what I know. I know.
I think it's Canton.
It's got to be Canton. Yeah. My pronunciation is just freaking brutal, dude. Kidding me? Imagine just me and my Mandarin class, dude. But that's basically the brief tale by me of Qin Shi, but the rise and basically not fall of a pirate leader, which is very, very, you know, Joseph Bannister from Ep 1, if you haven't listened, go back and listen, but he definitely has a downfall. Yeah, man, she just freaking went on, was a total boss, dude, and just got stuff done. So, and in a arena, or you could say pool, with a lot of dangerous fish, a lot of sharks, and she was top shark, dude, top predator, dude. So pretty impressive, dude. And that came as a suggestion from this dude. I want to say his name's Jake. I've been doing a little more stand-up, getting out there, doing some outdoor shows, and he said he was going to email me and stuff, but he literally, after the show, goes, bro, wrote some of these down, and this was on there. And I looked it up, and I go, let's go, dude. Fired up, no-brainer. Pirate, let's go. So badass lady pirate, dude. I'll just take a few questions and bone out, dude.
By the way, my my screenwriting professor in college was like, you know, it was the mid-90s, and he was explaining about himself. This is like the first day of class, and he's like, you know, I was writing a movie about a lady pirate named Anne Bonny. It was like the mid-90s, and I was almost done with it. And then I just interrupted him. I was like, you poor bastard.
Oh, dude.
Because I knew he was like, and then Cutthroat Island came out.
So brutal. So brutal, dude.
It apparently lost the most money a movie has ever lost at the box office, like over $100 million.
Why didn't that movie do well?
I don't know. It just didn't look.
Yeah, it kind of had like a corn. Like looking back on it, I mean, it had like a too cinematic feel to it. Like, it felt like a studio.
Yeah, or like a, almost, I mean, the set, I remember the set in the trailer kind of looked like a stage play.
That's what I mean. That's exactly what I mean. It felt like, when I say, like, it looked like it was shot in a studio or like a live taping of a play, exactly.
Apparently Michael Douglas was supposed to be in it, but then he dropped out and they got Matthew Modine.
Oh, yeah.
To replace him.
Matthew Modine.
Not exactly a one-to-one.
No, no. Michael Douglas was probably too busy making another sexy thriller, dude.
Yeah,
it's all that dude does. Yep. Good move on his behalf.
Yeah.
Strider, freaking what up, dude? I just had a quick question regarding your volleyball career. What position did you play? You seem like you played either middle blocker or right side oppo, dude. I also played in OC and wonder if you ever crossed paths playing in club tournaments in Anaheim or in South OC. Anyway, I love the pod. You're also being my spoke levels to a newfound heights, dude. Legend, bro. P.S. My girlfriend hates the Midwest / East Coast accents. I do too. I necessarily don't hate those accents. Maybe I said that. I don't know. Maybe because I'll sometimes do this voice. No. But I actually quite enjoy that. In any case, I did play middle, although I'm undersized for it, 6'3", but I had some bounce, dude, and I could jump quickly, and I could move laterally better, and a premier skill of the game was read blocking, and I was good at read blocking and anticipating, dude. Much like love making, you must anticipate your lover's next move. Same goes for the volleyball court. Your teammate and opponent's next move. And then, yeah, dude, American Sports Center in Anaheim, bro, next to Disneyland off Catella, dude. Yeah, bro, you better believe I was posting up there on Saturdays a little bit hungover after raging at my boy JT's house. Those 7 a.m. first game times, I'd be like, coach, you know, I'm not warm, my ankle. Noon game time, all right, dude, I've had some snacks outside, let's play. Dude, I've had a few Capri Suns and house some granola bars, let's go.
I also played, by the way.
Tyler. Oh, yeah. Aaron was
a back row player, server, specialist kind of guy.
Love that. Did you ever do any tournaments at the American Sports Center? You were in San Diego. Did you ever venture up for a club team or anything?
No. We went to a tournament in Santa Maria once, and then out in East County in San Diego, and then we went to Vegas for a tournament once. But that was
Vegas tournaments. Loved those Vegas tournaments.
Yeah, we had a ton of fun. We did not do well, but it was fun,
man. We stayed at Treasure Island one time. One of our kids' dads was like a high roller one time at the Venetian, and he got us all rooms at the Venetian. It was awesome.
Dude, we were like 8 to a room in the fuck. It was some sort of motel behind
to off strip.
Whatever's across from Treasure Island.
Hilarious. Yeah, dude. Oh,
it was not good.
Like, I stood at the Flamingo one time. There was like footprints on the ceiling. Like booze bottles not cleaned out from the guest that was there previous. It's like, thank goodness this was pre-COVID times, dude.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure someone got COVID in the lovemaking they were doing in there before it even existed. Some sort of stuff was getting passed around. What up, Strider? What do you think is the most historically accurate film and why, Jaden? I like to imagine this is Jaden Pinkett Smith writing in. definitely not Cutthroat Island.
No.
Saving Private Ryan, is that a true story?
No.
No.
It's based on some...
Is it based on the Civil War story of the letter they reference in the movie? When the general memorizes reading it? Signed, Abraham Lincoln.
Maybe, but I think there was a situation where there were brothers and one had survived and need to be pulled out, but
not to that.
I don't think it's I don't think it's exactly accurate.
Huh. As far as movie, I don't know. Band of Brothers, I heard, is pretty accurate, except there's one dude that was in there that all the guys just lost touch from, and they thought that he died like after the war, but he didn't. So I think, like, as far as within the series, like in all the operations and stuff, like it's very well documented in the book, and they even have interviews. And I watch Band of Brothers once a year. It's World War II. I freaking love it, dude. Episode 5 when Spears connects with High Company. Are you kidding me, dude? In the Battle of Ardennes. But I would say but that's a miniseries, not a film. We just talked about Gladiator. There's a lot of embellishing there, but you know that is true with Commodus in the games and stuff. He was Marcus Aurelius' son, but he did not necessarily assassinate him. I think there's a lot of factual inaccuracies with Braveheart. Like the love story with the French queen, all that.
Probably Life of Brian is probably the most historically accurate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great takes. I mean, great fire takes. You're going to learn stuff watching that for sure.
Have you not seen Life of Brian?
I've seen parts of Life of Brian. I know it's Monty Python, right?
Yeah.
I've seen the History of the World and the Holy Grail, but I haven't. Which one's Life of Brian?
Life of Brian's like Brian is a Jesus type character. Existing at the exact same time.
Dude, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
That's a genius. People would get mad if you made that now, I bet.
Oh, they were mad then.
Okay.
Yeah. George Harrison had to finance it, otherwise they wouldn't get it. They wouldn't have had it made.
All right. How have I not? This is like Necessary Viewer if you're trying to do comedy.
It's really funny. God, what? It's almost hard to like remember historical films right now. I don't know
why. I know. I would like to imagine The Patriot with Mel Gibson. I'd like to imagine all of that was real with Benjamin Martin, the reluctant hero. Those things definitely happened. I mean, it's probably got to be like a biopic, but of like, I don't know, Gandhi.
Yeah,
Ben Kingsley. Gandhi is pretty amazing and probably is pretty historically accurate. It's more recent.
That was Best Picture the year I was born.
Great movie. I'll put my hat in, you know, and say Gandhi at this point. Great watch. Long.
Yeah, they tend
really
to be
really good. Is Amadeus historically accurate? It's a really fun movie.
It's a little, I'm sure it's somewhat accurate. It's a little bit mystical, I guess.
Yeah.
With death and all that. I just had it in my head. Oh, Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Dunkirk's got to be pretty accurate.
Dunkirk's a good one. It's pretty like, the timetable better be freaking accurate. Tell you that much.
I mean, I'm sure the individual stories aren't necessarily, but I know some of it was.
When you think about those things, and it's always like representative of what happened. Chernobyl's a great historical series, miniseries to watch, which is pretty historically accurate. And they like create a character. They tell you at the end, like the woman scientist character, like represents the group of people that occupied her position, and she does a great role doing a great job.
I mean, that sort of stuff happens all the time.
Totally, that just has to go down.
It's always war films, pretty much.
Always war films. I would say something with a character, but I would say Gandhi because it's a pretty well documented history, a more recent history.
Tora, Tora, Tora.
So I've never seen it, but
it's Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, definitely don't watch Pearl Harbor. You know, I watched the movie Midway, and I'll tell you right now, it's not a very good movie, like, as far as, like, what they did, and it's kind of pretty, you know, it's rah-rah. But if you watch the documentary Midway, like, they follow all the stages of the battle, because it's a well-documented battle, and so all the beats are right there, and, like, you know, Dick Best and everything is, like, an actual dude who was a badass fighter, and I'd say that's pretty historically accurate. And we talked about this on the pod, and I've done a little more research to it. I would say that if he asks a question, like, the greater chances you have of it being more historically accurate are the greater research that's been done on the subject matter, and probably the more recent history it is, you know? So, I don't know. Like a movie Spartacus, I was reading about that, and in fact, little teaser for the next upcoming episode is going to be types of gladiator. Spartacus wasn't even the type of gladiator that he was. He was a different type. But Hollywood thought it looked cooler for him to be the type of guy he was.
I'll bet.
So you get stuff like that. We got freaking Gandhi. Great, great movie. Go watch it. Check it out. All right, let's freaking do one more, then freaking bone out, dude. Dude, Strider, I've noticed you've been lifting more. Dude, fucking thank you, dude. Good work, dude. Thank you. I'm wondering, is it just me, or do you notice that you're more horny directly after a lift? I stare at myself for straight up a while in the mirror after I can't wait for my dank-ass wife to get home so we can bone. Just wondering if this happens to other dudes too. Thanks, Landon. So basically what Landon's doing here is he's lifting, enjoying the gains that he's made for himself, gazing at himself, waiting to make love to his wife.
I hope that works out for you.
I love that, dude. I mean, I don't know
I do a lot of lusting after my wife. Doesn't always work out.
I mean, look, I'm fired up. I love that you and your wife are enjoying each other's physically and emotionally in that moment. Good. And if the lift is making you hornier, I'm all for it. Harness that horniness, dude. You know what I mean? It's a double-edged sword. I think it's like Spider-Man 1 quote, with great power comes great responsibility. When you're lifting and getting this horny, dude, you have great responsibility, dude. You can be so effective by managing your time. You can hop on the phone, call your cable company, call your credit card company, tell them you want lower APR, tell them you want better internet immediately after a lift, get stuff done, or go make love to your wife, dude. You know, she's got to be in the mood too, but you know what? Maybe it's going to be undeniable when you show her that friggin' rig that you're rocking. So I'm fired up. I'm loving it. Harness that horniness, dude. Look, Ching Shi harnessed a lot of horniness, dude, you know? And she became a badass leader. You know, did she have other assets too? But I think it's a slice of the pie to success. I'm going to tell you that. And I think it's a pretty hefty one. So I love it, Landon. Aaron?
I mean, I have, like I said, I just hope it's working out.
Hey, freaking man.
I hope when she comes home, she's into it.
Yeah, she's coming home from like a long day. He's just been standing in the mirror for 2 hours. Like, look at my fucking quads, honey. Honey, look at these calves. Do you see these gains? And she's like, look, you were supposed to make dinner. It's Thursday. It's your night. Did you make it? No, I just got Metrex powder and water. Let's go. Honey, no. I'm tired. I have a headache. I'm just going to take a bath and get in bed. All right. But first, I need to go in there and jack off. Is that cool? Okay. I'm going to Postmates some pizza. Chill. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, careful you don't get too jacked, because then anytime you go to the drill factory, you could hurt yourself.
That is true. You could go, yeah, especially if you're doing forearms or something like that, fingertip push-ups, your grip strength could be too gnarly. So yeah, be careful of that. Don't hurt your hog. Yeah. All right, dude. Fired up. Freaking dank up, dude. Questions, comments, suggestions, StriderWilsonShreds@gmail.com. Aaron, thank you. A beast as always, dude. Freaking stay stuck, dude. Late.